Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Voices for Justice. My name is Michelle Bart, and I'll be your host this evening, August 19th, 2009. Brittany Drexel, Trenton Duckett, Aji Dazar, and Amber Dubois, gone without a trace, and tonight the fathers of these missing children are asking for your help. Trenton Duckett turned 2 years old on August 10th, 2006. Just 17 days later, on August 22, 2006, he was reported missing from his home in Florida at 9 p.m. He hasn't been seen or heard from since. A resident of New York, 17-year-old Brittany Drexel, left home to hang with friends during spring break this year in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. On April 25, 2009, Brittany walked out of a hotel and hasn't been seen since. With Cupid in the air and excitement of purchasing a baby lamb through Future Farmers of America, Amber Dubois, 14 years old, left for her school in Escondido, California, with Valentine gifts for friends on Friday, February 13th, and since 7:10 a.m. has not been seen or heard from. On January 10th, 2009, Aji, a developmentally disabled six-year-old, was playing with friends outside his home in Florida, ran for the soccer ball, and vanished without a trace. Four cases, four children, four families left with no clues and left with sadness in their hearts. Among these families are four fathers that want your help today. We welcome Maurice, Chad, and Joshua this evening, and Antal, Aji's father, is actually at work, so we will be bringing him back in the next couple weeks for another show. To do some housekeeping, Voices for Justice, if you'd like to call in with questions, please feel free and do so. The number is 347-838-8622. Tonight's show, Kidnapped, Fathers of Missing Children, Speak Out. The websites are listed on our website at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. Brittany's website is Help Find Brittany, and Brittany is spelled BRITTANEE.com. And Trenton's website is helpfindtrenton.com. And Amber's is bringamberhome.com. We welcome the gentlemen with us this evening. Chad and Joshua, I believe you're on the line.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Let me see if we have Mo. Mo, are you on the line with us? Okay. Mo, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. How you doing, Mo?
I'm okay.
Okay. So let's go down the... Introduce to the listeners this evening, if you will, Joshua. You know, Trenton's been missing the longest. He went missing at 2 years of age in 2006. Tell our viewers, our listeners rather, what people in Florida and across the country can do to help get the word out about Trenton and what it's like to have to live each and every day working to keep your child's face in the media, and what you're doing with the billboard that you were just telling Chad and I.
People across the United States here in Florida, as well as all the other states, they can go on the websites and print out flyers, and even if they printed out five and just passed them out to five people and asked them to also do the same, that's thousands of people that are getting the name and the photo, and that generates a lot. You never know exactly who's going to have the one big break in the case that'll bring him home, as well as with other children. And day-to-day, living with this is a horrible feeling. I mean, I would never wish this to go on anybody. I've been dealing with it now for 3 years, and I'm going to continue to deal with it. And I'm very motivated to find my son. He's my pride and joy. I miss him very much, want him home, and I'm not going to give up until I do so.
Can you tell us a little bit about the circumstances? And I believe Melinda, his mother, was last seen with him as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the background, and maybe it will jog somebody's memory that may be listening this evening?
Yeah, Melinda, she had custody of him. We were in a court battle over custody and stuff, and things weren't going her way, so she created a fake email to put the blame on me, and they stripped me of all my parental rights. I had no visitation. I had no contact allowed, nothing. And when I decided to fight that in court is when everything kind of spiraled downhill. And I was at home one night, got a phone call. Our law enforcement showed up at my house and asked me where Trent was. And I told him that he was with her, and they said no, she had told them that I had taken him. And so I cooperated from day one and continued to work on that. And she swore she didn't know where he was, said that she had put him to bed that night, and went in to check on him, and he wasn't there. And all she kept saying was that I had done it. And so far to this day, we've heard nothing more. After law enforcement began to talk to her 10 days after Trent went missing, she committed suicide.
I'm sorry to hear that. Did she leave a note of any kind indicating that she had done anything to Trenton?
No, to this day, they still have no evidence that any harm was done to Trenton. She did leave a note. She actually left 3 of them, and they were all addressed to her family members. And pretty much all of them said and spoke of Trenton as when he's found or as he grows up. She hopes that he understands why she's done what she's done. So they all point towards he's out there. It's just a matter of finding him.
So from a young man's standpoint, I know you personally, Joshua. You're a young man. You've gone through a lot with, obviously you were a young father, and now your son is missing. Tips, leads, you know, you told me a couple years ago you still believe he's out there. So tell us what we can do and what listeners can do to keep this going. And also talk a little bit about that flyer where I know that you don't agree with the age progression photo.
Pretty much people can just keep their eyes and their ears open. I mean, just look at every child that goes by you. You never know if that child's one that you may have seen on the internet, or if that could spark a memory of something. Any little thing helps. It can be something that somebody thinks is irrelevant totally, but it may mean the world to us and may spark a big memory and bring the big break to the case that we need. The age progress photo, I don't really agree with. They asked for one age group, and then once we sent in the photos of that age area of my photos and Melinda's, then they requested a different set of photos for a little bit younger age. The age progress photo of Trenton was done using 4 to 6 photos instead of the 2 to 4 photos. So I think that there's a big difference there. I don't think that Trent would look like that at this point. He may resemble it a little more as the years go on, but I'm hoping that this is solved within the next day. I wish it was solved tonight.
Right.
But until it's solved, I'm going to keep driving forward, and I'm very motivated to to not only do Trenton's case, but to help in any way that I can with any other missing children.
For folks listening, if you know the case out in Leesburg, Florida, and you have information on Trenton Duckett, the number to call for the Leesburg Police Department is 352-787-2121. And like with Trenton's case, all of the cases you're hearing about this evening have substantial rewards associated with them for the safe return of the children or information leading to those that abducted the children. So please take note of the numbers that we're giving you this evening, listen to the stories, and think back about where you were at that time. We'll come back to Joshua in a few minutes. One case that a lot of people have heard about since spring break is Brittany Drexel. Brittany, beautiful young lady, 17 years of age, living in New York, decided one day she wanted to go with her friends on spring break to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Listeners may have recalled the video footage that has been seen numerous times on television, on Nancy Grace, and in the news media, where Brittany is walking into the hotel, 10 minutes later is walking out of the hotel, and that's where her family is left with. Chad, tell us a little bit about what's been going on and any tips and leads and what listeners can help all of you with out in Rochester, New York.
Well, as far as leads, we have hearsay leads from an investigator that Don had hired where he believes that this revolves around a drug community that was mainly stationed down in Myrtle Beach. My daughter went at around 9 o'clock, 9:15 time frame. She walked into a hotel to meet some boys, some friends, to figure out what she wanted to do that night, that Saturday night. Brittany decided to, well, she answered her phone. This is exactly what the police had told her. She answered her cell phone. On the other end of the line was a girl named Jen Oberer, who Brittany had traveled from Rochester down to Myrtle Beach with, which is one of the girls that she had stayed with in another hotel. The girl stayed in one hotel. The boys were already down there for at least a week, I was told, and that's where Brittany ended up. She apparently went into the room. She got the phone call from Jen. They had had an outing over the weekend, all through the weekend. Apparently, these girls, I have never personally talked to the girls, nor have I ever met the girls or anything, or the boys. And these were acquaintances, not friends. I mean, maybe it was a, she would call it a friend, but, you know, to Dad, I would know a true friend or whatnot. So basically, Brittany got a call from this girl. She was complaining about, why are you wearing my shorts? Bring me back my shorts. We're about to go out. So Brittany decided, you know, to bicker back and forth. The boys said in their interviews with the police, and they all seemed to have the same story. So it wasn't really a flag for the police at that time. Because their stories are very similar about what happened to Brittany and what they said in the hotel room, why she was there. What she was wearing was very similar to what, very, very similar to what, you know, was on tape that we all saw in the news coverage. Myself, I was up here in Rochester. I got that telephone call around 9:30 from my wife, and she had told me, or from Dawn, she said, you know, Chad, Brittany's missing. Long story short, Brittany went to go travel. She left the hotel room for the boys. She had decided to walk out the front of the hotel, which was seen on video, traveled down Ocean Boulevard between 7th Street Avenue and 11th Street Avenue. She went missing, which is a four-minute walk span on the main boulevard. It was a little brighter than dusk. It wasn't quite dusk yet, so it wasn't dark. It wasn't. The sun was still up, so it wasn't dark yet. And the very next camera where she would continue walking, if she was going to her hotel where those girls were saying, where they allegedly said they were calling from, and where the cell phone, their cell phones were pinged, that's where she went missing between those streets. That's where she vanished. So when I got the cell phone call from Dawn, I didn't even know my daughter was out of town. She lived with her mom. I text my daughter every day. How you doing, baby? You know, what's going on? How's your boyfriend doing? And nothing was flagged by me. Or what are you doing? You know, there's so many questions out there that people have. Did you let her go there? There's so many things that I could answer, you know, specifically. But I would take definitely more than the hour that the show is. But basically, that's how she went missing. What I believe now leads are going to, I believe in my heart that Brittany's still alive. Dawn believes that Brittany's not around no more. The reason why I believe this is because, and I also believe in my heart that I know teenagers, and these are older teenagers, and everybody knows what everybody's doing. I don't care what anyone else says. Teenagers know what they're doing. They text. They have so much means of technology that they let each other, especially if they're out of state, they're going to let each other know what they're doing. So one of them, out of the five individuals that were hanging out, plus there was more individuals that were hanging out, meeting with these other boys that were down there, they know something. I'm not saying if one of them did something to my daughter, or, you know, I kind of think maybe she walked in at the wrong time to the boys, she saw something she shouldn't have, and it led on from there. In my heart, that's what I believe. I believe she's still alive. I don't know. I don't know where else to go with this. The leads right now I have is she's been abducted, and she's in the drug community. One drug dealer's snitch of a drug dealer is saying that, yes, she was raped and murdered and left here. Our investigator looked upon that trail, false lead. Another one saying, well, you know, look at my... I look like my brother. My brother just got shot because I had ratted... I was talking to Dawn and telling her, look it, I'm hiding out right now in another state because I'm scared for my life. I know it happened to your daughter, but the main dealer who did this to her wants to kill me because I know. So there's all sorts of, I don't know if they're right leads or not.
So when a family gets that kind of correspondence, how do you handle that? One would think that would go straight to the police and let them rule it out. But for a family to see that kind of nonsense, or if it's nonsense at all, if it is true, then why aren't they going to police? But how do you handle that when you read that kind of stuff?
Well, I don't read it. What happens is I get this information directly from Dawn, and she tells me exactly what the investigator believes through his investigations, what he's heard from his people. So like you just said, it's hearsay. I don't take it personally. It hurts me. Of course it hurts me to believe that my baby girl, my oldest baby girl, could be suffering, could just be murdered instantly, or she could be trafficked somewhere. That's a whole other story. She fits the criteria for human trafficking. Michelle, you and I talked about what could happen in trafficking with her type of style and her look and her ways and stuff. I wake up every morning thinking, what can I do? Why did God put me here? What is he testing me with? What can I do to help other fathers and other mothers as well? I mean, I have more of a closeness to when I met Mo in New York City. I felt as a closeness, even though me and him were distant, because it's our children.
Exactly.
So... And this is so, and all the guys on this phone right now, they all understand, look, we just want closure. I don't care about the drugs, and I don't care with who said what on blogs, and I don't care about that. We just want to find our child. End of story. I don't care about accusations about ex-wives or accusations about, my daughter is this tall, she's this. This is how much she weighs. She loves blue. She loves soccer. You know, Mo's daughter, she likes to wear this. You know, this is what we want the community to see. When Josh just said, go here, get the print out the flyer, give it to your friends, and have their friends give it to your friends. I sent out global emails. Dawn passed, and her parents went down to Myrtle Beach. We've done all we can, as much as we can, to this minute, we're still talking about this, trying the best we can to update, thinking of foundation ways, thinking about what else can we do. Now here I am talking on Blog Talk Radio, you know, anything that may help us get closure.
And this past week, many of us were in New York from the folks by AmberReady.com, who hosted many missing children's families, and ABC and Robin Roberts and the folks out in Times Square. Times Square was the place to be this past week to get photos of these children up on the Tron so that the millions of people walking Times Square could see them. That may seem a little thing, but all the entertainers that came out and performed and everything else, just standing there to watch the performers, millions of people were seeing the pictures of missing children, and thousands of them from across the country, including the four we're speaking of tonight. And again, our friends at Amber Ready, there's many companies like that can help, so please visit them. In regards to Brittany, again, her name is spelled B-R-I-T-T-A-N-E-E, Brittany Marie Drexel. If you go to helpfindbrittany.com, you can find all the stats about her on there. If you have any information for investigators or know her whereabouts, please call the Myrtle Beach Police at 843-918-1300. For Aji, also goes by Gigi, spelled J-I-J-I, you can contact our friends at America's Most Wanted and National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. If you have questions for any of the fathers this evening, please feel free and give us a call here at Voices for Justice. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. Currently, I'm working with four families, maybe even five or six since I've been here in California from folks that I've met in Washington and New York. But one of those cases that are very personal to me right now is Amber's case. I'm having difficulty knowing that a 13-year-old bookworm, she loves books, and you don't see that too often in children anymore. They like the internet, but this young lady liked books. She loves reading, but just her story, you know, wanting to purchase a lamb to bring this baby lamb up as her own through, I believe it was Future Farmers of America. But on a little rainy, drizzly day on Friday, February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day, at 7:10 a.m., just yards from safety beyond the gates of her school at Escondido High School, nobody knows what happened to her. And that's what we're working on here in the Escondido, San Diego area. And tonight we have Maurice on the phone, her father. Mo, are you still with us? Mo?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Barely. Can you hear us okay?
Is that better?
Oh, much better. Can you tell us a little bit about how things are going, any tips, leads, maybe a little bit about the red truck for anybody that might be listening and any information that you can provide?
Absolutely. Thank you, Michelle, for having us on again. Friday the 13th, Amber was walking on her way to school. She was last seen by a couple parents who happened to know her, and she was approximately 200 yards from the front gate directly on the same side of the street of the school when she disappeared. We have no significant leads at this point. The closest we have to a lead is the investigations has narrowed down her disappearance to a three-minute window from 7:10 to 7:13 in the morning. And there was a mysterious red truck which appears in the parking lot of the maintenance building area of the school, not an area where parents typically drop off children. He was picked up on surveillance, and the truck was seen coming into the school grounds, hanging out in the parking lot. No one ever approached or left the vehicle, and it cruised back around to the front of the school at about the exact time Amber would have been in that location. All we have on it is basically a very grainy video, which was shot on a very low-resolution camera, so it can't be enhanced enough at this time to show a license plate information. But we do have a fairly clear image of it, and it can be viewed online. And we're hoping that either the owner of the vehicle will step up and clear himself, or perhaps he may have seen something because he was at the exact spot when Amber disappeared. So that's the closest we have to a lead at this point. We actually had a couple people who flew in yesterday from the VK9 search and recovery group. They are dog scent team, which specializes in aged scents. They can pick up a trail that's nearly a year old, and they're very specialized dogs. Our search and rescue fund has funded their coming out, and they are here from Maine and from Virginia, and they're currently working on tracing the exact steps that Amber would have taken just to verify that the sightings are correct and she did disappear from the area that we believe she disappeared from. And perhaps this will give us some form of a new clue or something to go with. But at this point, that's the closest we have to any tips or leads. We're hoping that anyone out there listening can log on to her website at bringamberhome.com. You can see all of Amber's images on there and links to other stories. And like I said, we're just hoping that one pair of eyes out there can see Amber and help us. It only takes one person. And at this point, just like the other gentleman said, please print out her flyer and get it out to who you can. If possible, I would suggest that anyone helping out any of our cases would provide a copy of the missing child poster to any local law enforcement and ask them to post it in their morning briefing room. That way your local law enforcement, who are the people on the streets who have the most opportunity to find our children, will be able to see our children's images in the morning before they go out. And I've found that to be a good way for the image to get out on law enforcement's eyes.
That's a good idea. And again, bringamberhome.com, Amber Leanne Dubois, tip line for Escondido, California Police Department, 760-743-TIPS, T-I-P-S. Mo mentioned something in regards to it only takes one person. He and posting in law enforcement agencies across the country is a fabulous idea, because with the number of children that go missing each year, it's hard to keep the flyers updated and moving.
Absolutely. And what we've noticed that when our local law enforcement forwards the information to other law enforcement agencies, because it comes across on a fax or their general mm-hmm. email, it's very rare that it actually gets to the law enforcement officers who are actually out on the streets. So by getting them to post it in their briefing room, it gets a lot more officers on the street to see it.
Great, good idea. We have a caller. Let's see. This looks like a caller from Washington. Caller, you're on the line. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Hi, Michelle. It's Melissa.
Hi Melissa.
I just wanted to. I had a question for Mo. On the red truck, I know the video was kind of hard to see, but was it a solid red truck or was it multicolored?
The truck is a single reddish burgundy colored. It does have chrome accents, and it is unique in a couple ways. It has chrome running boards along the length of the side of the vehicle. It has chrome tie downs around the back bed of the truck. Uh-huh. It had it looked as if there's a modified tailgate or no tailgate It's either modified for a like a fifth wheel hookup, or it has no tailgate on it. So it is a fairly unique truck. We had a video enhancement specialist go over the video images, and he just completed his report. He's provided that to law enforcement. Once they verify exactly his findings to be true, they're going through it with the FBI, then law enforcement will release the exact make and model of the vehicle.
Okay.
At this point, we don't have even an exact make and model of the vehicle.
Okay, that's what I was curious about. Now, you said that it could be viewed online. Is that on Amber's website? Is there a link to it?
I believe there is on Amber's website, or if you do a search for latest news on Amber, you'll see the video images for the red truck.
You can Google Amber and punch in red truck, and it will come up, I believe. Melissa Baum is actually, her daughter is missing, Lindsay Baum, and she was on our show a couple weeks back. And Lindsay's link to her website is also listed at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes to find out more about what's going on with Lindsay's case up in Washington. Washington State, that is. Did you have any other questions? Anything coming up in regards to search efforts for Lindsay?
Well, Laura Recovery's coming out next week.
Okay.
So we've got a search center that's going to be being set up here in McCleary, and we're having a town meeting on Thursday, the 27th, I believe that is, at 7 o'clock here in McCleary to get information on, out to the community and volunteers and so forth. But, yeah, I wanted a little more elaboration on that red truck because that's some other, because of some other stuff that's come up in Lindsay's case. And just tell the guys I'm still thinking about them and
thanks,
praying for all of
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Call. And
Thank
I
you.
I believe Carrie is scheduled to come up and help you guys on that.
Yeah,
well.
Carrie's coming up on Thursday, too. So I just talked to her today.
And good luck with that.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Bye.
Bye-bye. One thing that does come up constantly with search efforts, families do need to work together and work with law enforcement, et cetera. But, there's one component that I'm seeing a lot of with the families, and that is it shouldn't matter the dynamics of the families, or if it was a parent abduction, like in Ben's case, etc. Every child deserves to have their case and face visible at all times, and that's what we're hoping to accomplish with all of this. But tell us, Joshua, you were mentioning about a truck or a billboard that you were making that you have Brittany's face on.
Yeah, I'm building a custom truck. Been working on it for quite a while. It's the first one that's been done like it. It's going to feature 57 missing children from all over the United States. And this was kind of the start of a project that we want to do more of and try and cover many more missing children. Something that I've been wanting to do is something that can help other missing children and other families that have missing children. It's a way to get those photos and names out there, because chances are most of the time when a child's kidnapped, they normally don't stay right in the local area. They normally travel to other states, and we plan on traveling around with this truck to take to missing children's events, as well as car shows and stuff like that. We went through the internet and randomly selected missing children from many different websites. It took a little while to get them all done. The truck will be done the 27th of this month. It's going to be debuted at the Candlelight Vigil, which marks the three-year date of Trenton going missing. And it's just something that I felt that I could do. I've always been into trucks, so I figured, why not make something useful out of a hobby that I enjoy doing? And
good idea.
It means a lot to me to do it. We've got roughly 700 hours in the truck from start to finish, and it's definitely something that's near and dear to my heart. It means a lot to me, and it was just a way for me to continue to help other families as much as I can. because with now the economy how it is today, it's hard for a lot of families to travel and help other families. I know I do as much as I can here in Florida. If a child goes missing, I travel to wherever I need to here in Florida to assist them and help them as much as possible and kind of be there for them to lean on as somebody who can honestly say, hey, I know what you're going through. I've been there, and I know what it takes and how it is to deal with it.
Are there support groups out there for all of you and your families in dealing with a missing child?
There are some. Like here in Florida, some of the families, they have a Florida Missing Children's Day, and all the families that met up there, we kind of stay in touch and we show up at each other's events that we do, and we've kind of started a little thing, Families United Together, to bring our children home. That's been going on for about a year, and we pretty much stay in contact with each other almost on a day-to-day basis.
And that's for families in the state of Florida?
Yeah, and I mean, we're more than happy to extend it out to other families out of Florida.
Chad, do you know if New York has anything like that?
Well, I'm sure New York does, but Rochester itself, I'll tell you, I've never heard of it, and I'm very interested in finding this information out, because if they don't, I'd be the first person to jump on it and start something, because I believe a support group for at least my family and what we're having to go through as of late, we really need support. I mean, I definitely have support through friends and through, you know, a good community that talk to us, but I think a support group, I mean, just being with you guys this weekend, that kind of support group, it makes you feel in a comfort. Like I think Mo said, you know, this is a club that you don't want to be in, but we're in, and we all have that kind of a bond, and I think that's, I would love to start something like that if we don't have it here.
It's a club that none of you had the choice to join or not. You were forced into membership.
Yeah.
Mo, what about you? Are you part of any support group up where you reside or where Amber went missing?
As far as support groups, a group that's helped me quite a bit and stays in constant contact with me is an organization called Team Hope. They are an organization of counselors and people who have all gone through this. They're a really good organization. They actually understand what we're going through. They're prepared to help us with anything that comes up at any time and questions we have. But my biggest support is the people that are close around me, my close family and my girlfriend and people who are close to me.
If all of you have numbers or website addresses of organizations that have assisted you or you want them up on this site or our nationalvigilforhope.org site, let me know and we'll be happy to put those up. Speaking of vigils, I always have a camera in my hand, and this past weekend was no different when we were in New York, and I captured a photo of you, Mo, at the vigil for Amber, marking the 6 months of her disappearance, and I can't tell you how many comments I've gotten from friends and family and strangers alike in regards to how that photo made them cry. I said, well, can you imagine how it makes these parents cry? And so I guess what I'm asking is, are the regular vigils, I know when we did Kaylee Anthony, we were doing a regular weekly vigil, and then we did bigger ones maybe once a month, but do the vigils help or do they drain you even more mentally and physically?
I could speak Go ahead, Mo. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for me personally, it's a double-edged sword. I personally need to be able to let it out, and it helps to be able to let it out with people who are there to give you the shoulder to cry on and are there to listen to you. It helps to get her story out a little further. We typically will always have some form of media at our vigils, it does get it out there. But, yeah, it is very draining. After my New York vigil, within an hour later, I was back in the hotel room exhausted. I was done for the night. You know, it takes a lot out of you.
What about you, Chad?
I have to agree almost fully there. The double-edged sword is exactly how I felt. We did have a couple vigils, and the one main vigil that everyone seems to like and revolve around, at least locally here in Rochester, is the one that we have at Brittany School. What kills me is, and it's great to know and to feel the community's pure compassion and love and support, and it's there's so many words that are in my mind, but I can't even express that that's the spot I used to drop my baby girl off, that when she gave me trouble and she's late for school, that's where I dropped her off. And it's devastating that I was just here with you. I was just saying, make sure you call Daddy when you get off. I'll come get you from work, you know. It's a double-edged sword. It's great, but it's not good. You know, it's just having vigils. I mean, going to Amber's vigil there, it brings out feelings that, God, you know, it's we never ask. The hardest thing in life that I've noticed, and I know Mo will agree, and probably Josh, you know, the hardest thing that we could do as being parents is be a parent. The hardest thing in life to go through is to be a parent. And then when you lose your most precious treasure in the world, a vigil, really nothing can support you but closure. It can help. It to me personally, it'll definitely help when people keep my daughter's name in the media, keep talking to me, talking to family members, talking to, you know, people that knew of her, that, oh, yeah, my experience with her. But you know what? It's hard. It's just
Joshua,
hard.
What about you?
I have a little bit different outlook on it than Mo and Chad, and maybe it's because I'm a little bit younger than they are. To me, it gives me that much more drive and that much more energy to keep the search alive. I mean, to see all those people there that have the same belief that I do, that Trenton's out there, that it just drives me and motivates me even more, and it gives me that extra boost to keep it going. And I know that it drives me to bring him home, to show him, look, all these people are here to show you how much they care. Even though they don't know you, they're there to show you support, and they want to bring you home as much as I do.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm sure Mo agrees too. We both agree with that statement. I just think it's because, I mean, Mo, I have more than one child, so when I'm having to face my two other children who are younger than Brittany, and when they bring her name up, it devastates me because I don't know how to handle it at times. When my 6-year-old son says, you know, we say grace at dinner, and when he says, oh, and God bless Britt too, you come home, you don't know what to do or feel or say.
I know how you feel on that one too. I also have a 2-year-old, and he knows Trenton's picture. He can pick it out from anywhere, and it's always T. I have a portrait of Trenton's face on my ribs, and every night he comes in there and lifts up my shirt and has to give T a kiss goodnight. I mean, I completely understand with that, and that also gives me, I mean, it hurts and bothers me because Trenton's not there, but it also gives me that drive to keep the search alive and keep going to bring him home so that he can be with his brother.
Yes, yes.
In regards to the dynamics of families, I think, you know, we all, including myself, come from divorced families, things of that nature. But I've never had to be part of this club that you all are a part of and that I've been forced into it. What is it like for fathers in particular? You know, most of your situations, your child was living at home with one parent, and then you get that call that they're missing. And if you have other kids like you, Chad, or Joshua, that you have to juggle and you're still going through all of that, and then the added stress of daily life on top of, you know, having to commute like Mo does every weekend, you know, and how doesn't that drain all of you even more? I mean,
yeah, I don't know how to sometimes.
I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it in Mo's eyes this weekend, and I felt like, wow, this is someone that's got the same sort of energy as me at this point. It's you're drained to the point past. I mean, I was in the service for 10 years, so I knew multitasking and taking on duty for 24 hours, but nothing compares to this, nothing, because you get it from all sources in life. The second you wake up in the morning with, like me, I'm getting kids ready for school or for babysitters to work, trying to manage a professional career, then all of a sudden coming home and dealing with the children again, and then, oh, yeah, by the way, you got to answer a ton of calls and emails about you're missing, you know, your daughter, myself, my daughter, and, you know, it's nonstop.
I agree with that, and work don't understand, like, the company that I work for, They don't understand that I have to juggle Trenton's case and work. I work a full-time job, overtime hours, and everything else. And I also have to do Trenton's case is, it's actually a job for me. I do interviews and continue to work on stuff even when I'm at work. I do it on my lunch break, or I do it through text messaging or emailing off my cell phone. And they don't understand. I actually had one of my bosses tell me that I've been through no more in my life than anyone else that works for the company.
Oh, my God.
And I tried to explain to him, you know where your kid is. I don't. You know where your family is. There's no one else out here on this whole job site that doesn't know where their child's at.
Yeah, that's that kind of asinine remark that you're going to hear from certain individuals. They have no compassion, no care. No thought before they talk. Now you just shouldn't even acknowledge that.
Exactly. And people, it's hard for people to understand what families have to go through when their child goes missing. We not only have to deal with the fact of our child missing, we also have to deal with the fact of there's cruel, cold-hearted people out there, and I don't know if Chad and Mo's had it in their case that you get the prank phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten numerous ones. I've actually had them go to the extent of having a small child around the age of Trenton on the other line, and it was 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
They called my phone and had the child say, "Daddy, it's Trent. Come find me. I love you."
Oh,
and we dealt with that for months and months on end, and it was untraceable from what law enforcement said. They couldn't trace who was doing the phone calls. And then finally they were able to trace it, and it turned out it was a 16-year-old girl from out of state, and there was nothing that they could do to her, they said. So we have to deal with all those emotions also of getting those phone calls late at night, because I sleep, I don't know how they sleep, but I sleep with my cell phones sitting on the pillow next to my head. You wait for that phone call hoping, but you're scared to answer the phone when it does ring.
Yep. Scared to see what it says. And exactly, mine, it's a little different because there's so many kids my daughter's age around her and yet a little older, and that now we knew that one of them is a local drug dealer who goes out of state and deals nationally as well. So, and this is the one kid in her case that ironically hired the most expensive lawyer, a defense lawyer, to back him up. So if once the cops started, you know, what they needed to do to interrogate him, I lawyered up. So that's how I believe in my heart, you know something. I don't know if you did anything, but you know something.
So and you some, all really actually, in cases of this nature, you not only are already in the role of parent, you're now learning other professions and legal things from laws and what not to do and things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a full-time job.
Yeah.
Well, I situate.
What do you do to decompress?
You really have to have a hobby or something that you really, really enjoy that that can kind of set you at ease. Like, my thing is the trucks. If I get overstressed, I'll go out and work on my truck, whether it's midnight. I'll use a flashlight because it's just something that I can get that tension away and continue to do something in the meantime. I'm progressing forward, but it's also kind of easing my mind at ease a little bit.
Mo, what do you do to decompress?
I'd have to say I've redone my entire backyard and garden like two or three times over. I spend a lot of time out there, and I've put in a waterfall, a fountain, a new lawn. Just when I'm really frustrated, I pull out the chainsaw and the axe, and I start going at the big pine tree. So I release in different ways in my yard, and that's my place to escape. And I try not to bring my phone out there so I don't get interrupted when I need my time alone.
Chad, what about you? Anything you do to decompress?
Yeah, it's got to be put. I look at my children and my girlfriend's children. I look at our children differently now than I ever looked at my children before. I mean, obviously, I loved them as much of a father would, but I look at them much more differently as far as the security part of the father. And how I decompress in that way is I give them way more attention than I normally would. I'd be worrying about, like Josh is in the truck, I was big into my car. I was huge into my Grand Prix. I was so much into modding my car, and that's my life. Well, now it's modding my children. I so much want to be a part of their life and put the boys into sports and be there as an assistant coach and just be in my kids' lives more. I think that's how I'm able to feel better, that maybe I need to step it up as a parent a little bit more and not only keep them safer and educate the community about their children, but, you know what, just give my kids more attention and release that way.
Voices for Justice will take one more caller. Number, the call-in number is 347-838-8622. Again, 347-838-8622. Before we go, help find Brittany, BRITTANEE.com. We also have helpfindtrenton.com and bringamberhome.com. Substantial rewards, again, for all of these cases. So if you're listening and you know the whereabouts of any of these children this evening, or you know what has happened and you have information leading to those that kidnapped these individuals, please call your local authorities. Call 911, call National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or go to the websites. All their websites have the contact phone numbers. Again, before we go, we have about 7 minutes remaining on the show. Chad brought up human trafficking. Human trafficking is an issue. It's not going anywhere. It's in our backyard, folks. Our next show on September 2nd, if you've seen the movie Taken, we will have our guest who that book was written after. And Bill will be joining us for Human Trafficking, The Dark Secret of America. We're not quite sure if that's what happened to any of these children, but it can happen to you. Kidnapping, abduction, any kind of crime of this nature, it doesn't matter what financial level you're at, it doesn't matter what ethnicity you're at, where you live, what country, the small town in Washington where Lindsay went missing, to the large towns of Florida, Orlando, or San Diego. It doesn't matter, folks. And there are companies out there that can help you keep your children safe and have everything at your fingertips if something should happen. And two of those companies, again, AmberReady.com, and National Vigil for Hope has partnered with InstantAmber.com, and we encourage you to get to know them. With 5 minutes remaining, gentlemen, just tell us what our listeners can do for all of you, and just let us know what is on your mind. Chad?
What can the listeners do? Well, I'll tell you, if anyone is listening that's in the North Carolina, South Carolina, or Georgia, Georgetown is a small town. I believe it is still in South Carolina. I wasn't the one down there searching for her where I said Dawn was, but I do know Georgetown. Anyone listening in the vicinity down there, Brittany looks like a lot of young, short, beautiful Italian, dark skin, blue eyes, 100 pounds. She looks like a lot of those girls, but if you go to the website, helpfindbrittany.com, and you really look at her pictures, I actually have posted 3 Photoshop photos in there, very clear, detailed pictures of one of her naturally in front of a sundae she was eating with myself, another with her kind of posing herself for her MySpace picture, and another with her boyfriend took of her dressed up just before they went out to a nice dinner. So I've got several different looks of her, the latest looks that we have of her. And the best thing I can say is please contact the Myrtle Beach Police. On the website, it's got all the numbers. Missing and Exploited Children's Center has got their number and the case number. It's right there on a link on our website.
One other thing, Chad. You mentioned that you weren't down there searching. For our listeners, that is devastating to a parent. But Chad, knowing the story, Chad was having to stay with his other 2 children. So in a situation like this, when a child goes missing in another state, there's other dynamics associated with it that prevent you from having to do the things that you know you want to do, but then obligations and necessity of somebody staying home with the rest of the family. So, it's not just a hit and miss that when a child goes missing that, a flyer gets issued and the child comes home. There's a lot of work that goes into it, not only from families, but law enforcement as well. Any last thoughts, Mo?
Yeah, a couple. Once again, I just want to thank everyone out there for taking the time to log in, call in, and listen to all of our stories. And I wish everyone out there as much luck as I wish we have in getting our child home. You had mentioned something about you had a Facebook page, Michelle. Can you provide that to the audience so they can log on to it as well?
I'm not sure what the URL is, but it's if you go to Facebook and just punch in Michelle Bart, you'll find me.
Great, thank you. I just want to make sure that got out there.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
And once again, Amber's a very average looking 14-year-old girl, bright blue eyes. She, as stated before, she's an avid reader, loves animals, and by all means, if anyone who's out there, please log on to her website and download an image. And I always ask people to keep a flyer on their seat with them in their vehicle, so if they ever feel that they see someone who may look like Amber or any of the other missing children, they have those flyers there in their vehicle that they can reference right away. And they know who to contact and everything, It's difficult once you look at an image and then turn off that web page to remember exactly what that child looks like. If you have that flyer sitting in your vehicle on your dash or in the glove box and you recall seeing someone similar to that, it takes a second to lift up that page and verify if you feel it is. And one thing I've noticed, a lot of people who feel and have reported possible sightings. If you ever feel you see Amber or any other missing child, don't hesitate to go up to that child and ask them who they are. Take the time to go up and talk to that person, because a lot of times people call in these tips that they may have seen a child a couple days earlier or something like that. It's really difficult for any law enforcement to follow up on that. If you take the extra minute to go out there and confront the child, you'll have a better understanding if that child is missing or not. So I just really would like to emphasize. Take the extra moment.
Good thoughts. Good thoughts. Joshua, last thoughts?
Just continue the efforts and keep your eyes, your ears open. The flyers, another idea would be you can tape them in your back window. That way cars around you also can see them. I mean, there's millions of people on the streets every day driving, parked cars, people walking by them and everything. And just everybody remember, God never gives you more than you can handle at one time. And that's part of what motivates me and drives me. There's a purpose behind everything, even though we don't see it. There's a hidden purpose there. And I know it's hard on families as well as it's hard on me. But we strongly believe that we're going to find him, and we're going to continue the efforts until we find him and bring him home.
Well, again, folks, to find any information on these children that we have spoken about this evening, Brittany Marie Drexel, Trenton Duckett, Amber Leanne Dubois, please visit our site at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes, and you'll find a link to all of their websites. And again, join us on September 2nd for Human Trafficking, the Dark Secret of America. Thank you, gentlemen, and know that we're all here for you. If there's anything that we can continue to do to get the word out about your children, just let us know.
Thank you, Michelle, and good luck, guys.
Good luck.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Once more I'm here again.